Welcome back to Brainwaves, continuing medical audiocation for neurologists and trainees. I'm Jim Siegler. Today on the show, posterior reversible encephalopathy syndrome, or PRESS. Now, PRESS is pretty interesting. It's a condition like malaria, Italian for bad air, or alien hand syndrome, whose names really don't tell you much about the syndrome. And many physicians have falsely assumed that the name accurately describes the clinical presentation. PRESS is not always posterior, not always reversible, and is not always associated with encephalopathy, but it is a syndrome, and a well-recognized one at that. For this episode, I've collaborated with Dr. Amy Pruitt, Professor of Neurology at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, in order to summarize how this clinical entity manifests radiographically and clinically. Unfortunately, this being an audio podcast, we can't actually show you the images, so be sure to check out our website, brainwaves.me, in order to see some great examples from our collection. Let's get started. First of all, I opened this episode by criticizing the nomenclature. This condition was not always called PRESS, and in the earliest description in 1996, Hinchey and colleagues christened this entity with the title of Reversible Posterior Leukoencephalopathy Syndrome, or RPLS. But out of the inaccuracy or incompleteness of this name in describing the radiographic appearance, the term PRESS emerged. In its most classical form, PRESS appears radiographically as a bihemispheric, often posterior, usually in a watershed distribution of the parieto-occipital regions with subcortical vasogenic cerebral edema. PRESS can at times be missed on a CT scan, so MRI is usually used to confirm the suspicion. If anything, MRI may be necessary to exclude the alternative diagnoses, which we'll go over in a second. Two major mechanisms for PRESS have been hypothesized. In the first, severe hypertension may overcome normal autoregulatory mechanisms in the intracranial vessels, leading to endothelial injury, breakdown of the blood-brain barrier, and vasogenic edema. Because this hypothesis only accounts for cases of hypertensive encephalopathy, and not cases of toxic, septic, or hypotensive cases of PRESS, an alternative mechanism has also been proposed. In the second hypothesis, T-cell activation and inflammatory mediators like cytokines can cause endothelial activation, vascular permeability, and ultimately vasogenic edema. This may account for some of the intriguing epidemiologic findings, like how about 50% of PRESS patients have an underlying autoimmune disorder like lupus or inflammatory bowel disease, even though 80% of cases are ultimately attributed to hypertensive emergency. Besides hypertension, other risk factors of PRESS include the use of calcineurin inhibitors such as tacrolimus, associated conditions like renal failure, sepsis, eclampsia, shock, TTP, sickle cell disease, other chemotherapies, and many other disease states. Now onto the meat of this episode. We could talk forever about the basics of PRESS, but I want to spend this brief time focusing on the more unusual aspects of this disease. First, let's talk location. As the name suggests, we think about the occipital lobes in PRESS, hypothetically because there's a relatively lower degree of sympathetic innervation of the posterior circulation, which renders this area more susceptible to impaired autoregulation. However, frontal and temporal lobe lesions are observed in 3/4 of all cases, cerebellar lesions in 1/2 of cases, and the deep gray nuclei, or brainstem, in 1/3 of patients. There have even been a few cases of spinal cord PRESS. We've got a good example of that on the website. More often than not, lesions in these atypical locations will accompany parieto-occipital lesions. Although unilateral PRESS has been reported, you might want to consider evaluating the patient for vascular territory infarction, or tumor, PML, and rarely an infectious paraneoplastic or autoimmune limbic encephalitis if it involves the temporal lobes. Second, let's talk about radiographic appearance. PRESS often stands out by its confluent lesions traversing gray and white matter, which do not respect vascular territories. A radiologist can spot PRESS on a flare sequence from all the way across the room. In my opinion, because the lesions look kind of fluffy or swirly, as opposed to tumors which have more distinct borders or more obvious cortex-sparing vasogenic edema, and infarcts which nicely respect vascular territories. But some features are less typical. For instance, restricted diffusion is rare, but it happens, and according to a review in Lancet Neurology from 2015, DWI and ADC changes with PRESS occur in 15-30% of cases, and these occur in the distribution of the T2 changes. The presumptive mechanism here is PRESS-associated infarction, so it stands to reason why patients with PRESS and accompanying restricted diffusion have a characteristically poor prognosis than patients with PRESS in isolation. Because of the overlap between PRESS and infarction in this case, and the difficulty in distinguishing the two, many providers will treat the patient as if they were experiencing a stroke, and sometimes RCVS can be very difficult to distinguish. the coexistence of a thunderclap headache should raise your suspicion for RCVS. Enhancement on T1 sequences is not unusual and is reported about 20% of the time, as the alleged mechanism involves blood-brain barrier disruption. An associated hemorrhagic component may accompany PRESS in 15% of cases. This usually takes the form of one of three patterns that have been described: a sulcal subarachnoid hemorrhage, intraparenchymal hematoma, which is usually small, and petechial hemorrhages. For cases with associated hemorrhage, you should also be thinking about cerebral amyloid angiopathy and amyloid angiitis, or RCVS, when there's extensive flare change. I came across a case recently, actually, where the consult was for a mild diffuse sulcal subarachnoid hemorrhage along the frontoparietal convexities. Turns out the MRI confirmed other features concerning for PRESS. We've posted this image to our website. Moving on to the clinical manifestations, encephalopathy being the third component in the name of PRESS, it is the most common symptom and is present in 50 to 80% of cases. Seizure is perhaps the next most common symptom, occurring in 60 to 75% of patients. And because it is so common in patients with PRESS and a depressed mental status, I don't think you'd be faulted for monitoring unresponsive patients on continuous EEG in order to identify and treat subclinical seizures. In fact, status epilepticus may occur in one of every eight patients, so you should have a low threshold to hook someone up to the EEG. Other symptoms include headache in about 50% of patients, vision disturbance in 33%, and focal neurologic deficits in a minority of 10 to 15% of patients, which depend on the area affected by PRESS. While PRESS is known for its reversibility, both clinically and radiographically, it's not a benign condition. In its most severe forms, PRESS increases the risk of mortality, usually because of the underlying condition, sepsis, renal failure, organ transplant, but sometimes it's attributed to intracranial hypertension, intraparenchymal hemorrhage, or brainstem compression from uncal or tonsillar herniation, and there have even been cases of obstructive hydrocephalus from brainstem crowding. In fact, studies show a mortality rate of 3 to 6% by 3 months. Among survivors, nearly one-fifth have permanent neurologic deficits, including hemiparesis, seizures, and headaches. And although the disease is thought to be monophasic, like the Guillain-Barré syndrome, there's about a 5 to 10% risk of recurrence. Because there are many faces of PRESS, you should keep an open mind and a broad differential. We've reviewed several of these diagnoses here in their respective sections. Depending on the imaging appearance and the clinical history, your differential diagnosis may include infectious encephalitis, or acute disseminated encephalomyelitis if there's been associated fever, osmotic demyelination if there's been a rapid metabolic shift, toxic leukoencephalopathy, as in the case of chasing the dragon for inhaled heroin, MELAS, CNS vasculitis, RCVS, and many others. You should suspect PRESS in patients with an underlying autoimmune disorder, anyone with poorly controlled hypertension and sepsis, and MRI should be considered when the diagnosis remains unclear. PRESS is a relatively common member of the neurologic differential, but it has many mimickers. You don't want to miss any of them. Thanks for listening to our show today. We were able to quickly review the typical and atypical features of PRESS, both clinically and radiographically. For a review of some of the imaging features, I recommend you check out our website at brainwaves.me. Thanks again to Dr. Amy Pruitt for helping put together this content for you and gathering some of the images. I'm Jim Siegler. We'll see you next time.
This episode was produced by Jim Siegler. Music by Lovira. I'm Erica Mejia. Join us next time for another edition of Brainwaves.